Welcome to China in Context. I'm Duncan Bartlett. When Xi Jinping went on a tour of Europe in May 2024, he chose his itinerary carefully. He started with a trip to the countryside in southwestern France at the invitation of the French President Emmanuel Macron. Later, Mr. Macron hosted a reception for Mr. Xi at the Elysee Palace in Paris. And then Xi Jinping flew on to Serbia and Hungary, two nations which could be seen as troublesome members of the European family. So what did this trip achieve from China's perspective? Are there any signs of rapprochement between China and Europe? Well, I'm pleased to welcome back to the podcast an expert who's well-placed to help us understand the implications of Mr. Xi's words and actions. He's Hans Moll, Senior Associate Fellow at the Mercator Institute for China Studies in Berlin, also known as MERIX. Hans, thanks very much indeed for joining us again.
Thank you for having me again. Nice to be back to the program, Duncan.
Now, let's start with the idea that some of the world's leaders are good friends with Xi Jinping. What's your view on China's strategy towards Europe? Would you describe it as friendly?
I would rather not use that term, and I think the notion of good friends for statesmen and politicians is somewhat misleading anyway. If you ask me how to summarize this trip and the intentions behind China's and Xi's visit to Europe, most broadly, I would say it's about promoting autocracy. Promoting autocracy, both in the sense of encouraging autocracies domestically. You mentioned a rather strange list of countries which Xi Jinping visited. France, all right, France is not an autocracy, but Hungary and Serbia certainly are. And they're not exactly heavyweights in the European context. So you wonder about this. So I think this was, and it is about encouraging autocracy at home, but it's also encouraging a transformation of the international order in ways which suits Xi Jinping, which suits the Chinese Communist Party, which suits authoritarian or totalitarian governments better than the present international order.
Right. Well, you've given us a great starting point for our discussion. Let's look at those countries individually. Xi Jinping held talks with the French President Emmanuel Macron in the Pyrenees in southwestern France and also in Paris. Now, we know that among other things, they discussed trade, they talked about the Olympics. The Chinese side said that the meetings were fruitful. What struck you as significant about the meeting between Macron and Xi?
Well, I think, Duncan, you struck the right tone by pointing out that those meetings have to be looked at from three different perspectives. One is commercial economic relations between China and France, China and the European Union. The second is foreign policy, and the third is domestic politics. Now, if I look at the results of the meetings between Macron and Xi, and there were several in Paris and in the Pyrenees, as you pointed out, I think overall the results have not been particularly impressive for either side. But I would also say that it has served Xi Jinping better than it has served Emmanuel Macron. On the commercial side of things, if you look at the results and you remember them to the past, those summit meetings between the French president and the Chinese president would have huge contracts signed. You know, Airbus would appear prominently, for instance. Well, in that case, the commercial results of the meetings were also rather meager. So, and in terms of foreign policy results, if Emmanuel Macron really had thought he would be able to change China's position on the Ukraine war, on his support for Russia, for instance, I think the result should have told him that this was misleading, that he was wrong about this. I cannot see how Xi Jinping conceded anything significant in those meetings to France or to Europe.
Now, look, another person who met Mr. Xi in Paris was the European Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen. I tend to see her as being hawkish on China. I think it was Ms. von der Leyen who originally came up with the idea of de-risking the relationship with China. Now, in Paris, among other things, she said, "We will defend our companies, we will defend our economies." What did she mean by that in the context of China?
I would agree with you. I think Ursula von der Leyen has really taken a rather tough line on China, and she has shifted the position of the European Commission on China rather significantly, and perhaps even the position of the European Union overall has contributed to this shifting. I would characterize her foreign economic policy approach as protective mercantilism. I mean, it's basically about preventing China from exploiting the European markets through heavily subsidized industrial export offensives. Ursula von der Leyen has made it very clear she intends to defend Europe against that. She has used this specific language, you know, with all its conflictual, even military undertones. It's about defending Europe against a perceived surge or a surge on the horizon or already a materializing of Chinese electric vehicles, steel, solar panels, where the European assessment, at least, is, and von der Leyen assessment is, and I think it happens to be broadly correct, that China has built up huge overcapacities in those industries and now is looking at ways to get rid of those overcapacities by exporting more, by surging exports. And that's what she wants to defend against. So protective mercantilism, you could call this. It certainly, you know, has industrial policy implementation as well. It's about a hands-on approach to industrial development.
So after visiting Paris, Xi Jinping went on to Serbia. Well, that's not a big nation. In fact, China's trade with Serbia is about 10 times smaller than China's trade with Germany, for example. Why did Xi Jinping choose to go to Belgrade in Serbia?
I think this visit was primarily about driving wedges in the transatlantic alliance, trying to move the European Union and the European countries away as much as China can. Achieve from its alliance, from the alliance with the United States, from NATO. It was about mobilizing domestic nationalist sentiments against NATO. One of the chief reasons why she visited Serbia was to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the notorious, famous NATO bombing of the Chinese embassy in Belgrade. This was attacked in the context of the Kosovo war by NATO against Serbia to prevent ethnic cleansing in Kosovo. And this is now the 25th anniversary that happened in 1999. It's still vividly remembered in China. And it is used to point out how aggressive the United States is, how aggressive an alliance NATO is. Of course, there are overtones about NATO in East Asia here, the American alliances in East Asia, and to mobilize nationalist sentiments at home against America, against NATO, and rewarding a country and a regime in particular, an authoritarian regime, which recently really has moved towards China and away to some extent from Russia, its traditional partner, because Serbia, which also pretends it wants to join the European Union at some point, Serbia has found it increasingly difficult to maintain its relationship with Russia, while at the same time trying to deal with Europe. So China is a perfect alternative from Serbia's point of view.
Well, that's fascinating. I hadn't realized all those points, actually, but one of the listeners to the podcast, who's Chinese, told me recently that he chose to go on holiday in Serbia because Chinese people don't require a special visa to go there, whereas it's much more difficult for Chinese people to visit, at least individually, some of the EU countries. Well, Mr. Xi wrapped up his European tour in Hungary, and he was absolutely fulsome in his praise for the Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban. I mean, I could read you some of the comments. Our bilateral relationship is the best it's ever been in history. That's Xi Jinping's comment. We'll do our utmost to guide our relationship and cooperation onto a new golden path, which will help us to attain even loftier goals. Can you share your view, please, Hans, on this relationship between Xi Jinping and Viktor Orban?
Well, again, let me come back to the theme of promoting autocracy. You know, Viktor Orban is an autocrat. So far, he has been a successful autocrat, and he has been very much on good terms with China. Of course, if you compare Hungary to Serbia, Hungary has the big advantage of being a member within the European Union, a member of the European Union. And if you have a China-friendly member of the European Union, then you can use your position to prevent things from happening within the European context, which are annoying to China. And this is exactly what Viktor Orban has done in the past repeatedly. He has repeatedly blocked positions taken by the European Union critical of China. So in that sense, he has been very useful from China's point of view as a kind of Trojan horse, if you like, within the European Union. You're quite right. I mean, this has been quite a remarkable visit in terms of diplomatic protocol. The Hungary has now been promoted into the position of an all or into having an all-weather comprehensive strategic partnership for the new era with China. This is quite a mouthful. And this is the first country in Europe which has been promoted into this special category of an all-weather comprehensive strategic partnership. It is sort of for the protocol. This is impressive. It underlines this very close partnership between China and Hungary, and it also underlines how China tries to reward its friends in Europe. Hungary has benefited nicely from its special position and from its position within the European Union as a home to Chinese foreign direct investment. Hungary's share has been disproportionately large, and BYD is going to build a major electric vehicle production site in Hungary. Other Chinese companies have been considering that as well. So Hungary is benefiting from that commercially, economically, and I think China wants to demonstrate its capacity to reward those who are loyal.
Well, lastly, as you're in Berlin, I'd like to hear your perspective on why the German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, declined to meet Xi Jinping during that recent trip to Europe.
That's a very good question, Duncan. Well, he was not there because he didn't want to be there. He was invited, or he could have received an invitation formally if he had wanted. He did not want to be. He was in China himself recently, about a few weeks ago, alone. You indicated earlier on that Macron this time, as well as on previous occasions, made it a point to invite Ursula von der Leyen along to meet Xi Jinping with him. They once in the past had a meeting, the three of them, Olaf Scholz, Emmanuel Macron, and Ursula von der Leyen, which I think would be a format which would underline a degree of cohesion and coherence of the European policy stance towards China. The fact that Olaf Scholz rejected that possibility tells you that to some extent China has been successful in dividing the Europeans, splitting the European position on China. And I would characterize Germany's and Olaf Scholz's approach to China as accommodationist mercantilism. You know, it's also about really benefiting politically and diplomatically from economic relations. But what Germany prefers to do and what Germany's large corporations prefer to do in their relationship with China is to accommodate, you could even say, to appease China. In my view, mistaken assumption that being nice to China is being rewarded by China eventually.
Well, thank you, Hans. I always appreciate your very helpful analysis. That was Hans Moore, Senior Associate Fellow at the Mercator Institute for China Studies in Berlin. This podcast is produced by the SOAS China Institute in London. You can find out more about our courses and research at soas.ac.uk. But for now, that's all from us here on the China in Context podcast team.